You just think we just, you know, whatever happens, we just shit another player. And everything's going to be perfect. All of our fans think that. You all think that. That's what you write about.
Unacceptable in all areas. Unacceptable coaching, unacceptable playing, unacceptable effort. Not what we're about.
You don't want to be here. There's a specific reason. Not really, you know, I think we did a poor job recruiting. If guys are coming in and immediately walking out the door because it was something different than what they thought it would be. We lied to them during recruiting, or we sold them on a dream that wasn't true.
Certainly, like I said, coach our kids to do the right thing and you know, play with poise, play with confidence, play with dignity, play with class. At the same time, we're not going to take anyone's shit either.
We want to be a big, fast, dominating, aggressive, relentless football team that nobody in the SEC wants to play.
Now, that's also a second in the West, baby.
Yes, sir.
Time we're ever getting excited about second. From now on, it's first, okay?
All I want to do is fucking eat. I want you to eat. I want you to eat. I want you to want this shit. Do you want it? Do you want it? Show me.
Bunch of did it again.
Welcome in to the latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter, and I'm joined as always by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Vols on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, buddy. How the hell are you?
I'm doing good, Shay. We got a ton to cover here, so let's just jump right into it. And I hate to do this to you, Shay, but we're going to start here with the game that they started at damn 9:30 at night for some damn reason. Alabama beats Tennessee 35-13. And the biggest story from this one, Shane, obviously, the injury status to Tua Tagovailoa. Brian Maurer both knocked out of this game. There was some controversy with the officials. Obviously,
you think?
Obviously they did a poor job. I know you're going to cover that, so I'm just going to kind of gloss over that. But you know, my main takeaway from this one, Shane, obviously the score is a little, it looks a little lopsided, but you know, I really thought Tennessee matched Alabama's physicality for much of this game. This was the most success that I can remember a Tennessee team having on the ground against Alabama. In years past, particularly against Alabama, Shane, like the Vols got down early, they gave up a touchdown, then they throw an interception, and you think, okay, oh God, this is the Vols. It's just going to snowball. And what happens? They keep fighting. They intercept Tua. They make it a game here, Shane. And I know it's kind of hard to judge this game because both the quarterbacks went out. But not to say I was disappointed at Alabama because they played a good game. But I think once again Tennessee loses to a, you know, a really elite team here. But I kind of come away impressed with the Volunteers, even in defeat.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you, man. I'll tell you what, these guys have got some damn fight in them. I'm very proud of Tennessee. I am. And, you know, I want to take my Tennessee glasses off for a second. I'm a little worried about Alabama. The drop-off from Tua to Jones is significant. These playmakers on the outside, you know, didn't become really a factor the rest of the game. Mm-hmm. And I'm a little worried because this is a serious injury, you know what I'm saying? And you know, I think they're optimistic that they're going to have him back in a week, but I don't think so, man. I mean, this is a significant high ankle sprain. I mean, you see it in the pros. This is a multiple week deal. You saw it last year with Tua. It's something he struggled with. So, I'm a little worried, especially with the LSU game looming right around the corner, you know.
Mm-hmm. So Alabama came out there on Sunday, confirmed the injury, high ankle sprain, like you said there. They've already performed the surgery on him. They did it Sunday morning. It was a tightrope procedure. And ironically enough, Shane, this is the exact procedure Tua had last year after the SEC championship game. And this is a 3 to 4 week recovery. There's a lot of speculation that Tua can get out on the field. And, you know, he's telling his teammates he's going to be there. He's going to be ready for LSU. That's in 20 days. So that's that's right there, the 3 4th weeks. I have no doubt that Tua will play in that game at this point, unless, you know, barring an unfortunate setback. It's not, to me, the fact that will they have him or not. I think they will. But to me, I think he's going to be limited. He's not going to be running. I think even in the college football playoff we saw last year when he had, you know, several weeks more, he was not I did not think he's at 100%, and I don't think he's going to be against LSU.
All right, Mike. Now I'm putting them big orange glasses back on for a second, all right? Because it's hard enough to beat the number one team in the nation, but it's even harder to do when it feels like you ain't getting a fair shake. And I'm going to tell you, man, I don't like to blame refs. I really don't. I don't like getting caught up in this. But, I mean, officiating took a big L yesterday, if you ask me. Mm-hmm. And not just this game. There was other games. I feel like that officiating, you know, really changed the outcome of the game. You know, there's just a couple of things in this one that really stands out. If you watch that unnecessary roughness on the quarterback, it's a total bullshit penalty. You know, I can get how it can be an illusion, how everything went down, but there's an angle from the side. You see, there was no push off on this kid. That was a third down. That was a huge one for us. The Wanya Morris, they claimed that he had the holding penalty there at the end zone. Mm-hmm. On the replay, you clearly do not see a holding. The announcers are like, well, maybe they meant the running back. Yeah, I mean, it's easy to get Wanya and the running back mixed up, you know. I can see that. And then you get down there, and there's like some holding penalties. I mean, that one was a big one. But when they came out, and Juwan Jennings is at quarterback, and then they stop the game, Mike. They don't throw a flag. They stop the game, and then they crank it back up, and then we get a 5-yard penalty. It's like, what are we doing here? You know what I'm saying? It's hard not to feel like this game wasn't rigged just a little bit. And I know it's not. I mean, I know these guys aren't making money off this thing, and I don't want to start that trend, you know, but there was a lot of things that happened that night that really, I mean, it had to be a perfect game for Tennessee to be in it. Mm-hmm. And we couldn't do it because some of these stupid penalties that we saw, not to mention, I've been hard on Garantano for a while now. And then I said, you know what? He's just a kid. He's trying to do his best. You know, he's giving his all for Tennessee. But I'm going to tell you, man, the kid does not have it. He doesn't need to be on the field. You know what I'm saying? That quarterback sneak, and that was, you could see Trey Smith pulling. That was not supposed to be a quarterback sneak. And he blew the game, man. It was a 14-point swing. And we keep giving this kid opportunities. He's afraid to throw the ball down the field. And I'm tired. I'm tired of defending him, Mike. I can't do it anymore. I'm over it.
Yeah, I honestly, I think this may be the very last time we see Garantano, and that's even with Brian Maurer's status up in the air. I think moving forward, we're probably going to see JT Shrout, maybe even see some Juwan Jennings go the Lim Bowden route. So I think that's kind of what they have to do at this point, because Garantano's, you know, I think he is trying his hardest, but he seems to be doing more, you know, to hurt the team than to help him, and you just can't. You can't work around that. Like you said, Shane, 13 penalties on the Vols, 8 on Alabama. This was a lot of penalties in this one. I do agree the penalties played a factor in this game, but the biggest factor in the outcome to me, Tennessee, 4 trips into the red zone. Obviously, the, you know, debacle of the fumble that was returned, that was the one time Tennessee didn't score in the red zone. But of the 3 times they did score in the red zone, 2 of them were just field goals when they had it within striking distance there. That was kind of the difference in the game.
What about Judy? What about the Judy thing? I mean, that one blew my mind. It was like they stopped it to see if he was in the end zone. There was no flag on the field. Mm-hmm. There was no targeting. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, wait, what do we got here? You know, let's throw this kid out of the game, you know, because now that we've slowed it down to, you know, 10 seconds a frame, you know, we can say, you know what, there is targeting. Let's go ahead and eject that fella. So if you slow enough of these plays down, you're going to find targeting just about on every play. So I thought that was stupid. But I will say this, Alabama, uber talented. I mean, they got a lot of weapons on that field. I am a little worried about the quarterback, but I don't want to say not worried, but it felt like they kind of found a running game, mm-hmm. something that they haven't been able to do in the past, and Tennessee was playing some great defense. So, I mean, you got to feel good about that, but they have got to get this backup situation under control, because there's a good opportunity that one of these guys are going to be playing LSU when it comes. And I'm not trying to discredit Arkansas or anything like that. I'm just saying there was some positive things for Alabama during this game. And with Tennessee, these guys didn't back down. I really liked that. I mean, honestly, it didn't feel like they were scared of Alabama like they have been in the past. Mm-hmm. You know, guys like Trey and Wanya, I tell you, if I could take two guys down dark alley with me, it's those two fellas right there, because they fight to the very end. So that's what I like to see with a young team like this. They may not be the most talented at this moment, but they had some fight in them, and this was a great game, back and forth. You got your money's worth. We had the lights going on. I mean, it was a hell of a ball game, and those guys smoking them cigars, I had to put mine up, you know. That kind of hurt, but that's where we're at right now, Mike.
Well, last thing I got on Alabama, Shane, I'm glad you hit on the running game. Najee Harris, another big performance. He went for 105, two touchdowns. Brian Robinson had another 40 and a touchdown. And Alabama's obviously going to have to lean on the running game with Tua sidelined for the next couple weeks. Obviously, they got the bye week coming up, so it may only be the one game. But it seems like that's getting going for Alabama. That's huge moving forward. So let's kick it over to Nick Saban, talking about Mac Jones. You know, Nick Saban, I think he was damn grumpy. It was late. I think that was part of it. He touched on Mac Jones, on all the penalties in this damn game. And then someone tried to comment on the fact that Alabama's, you know, freshman linebackers playing a little bit better. And Saban was not having that shit.
So we took him out. Mac had to go in. So, I mean, don't really have time to give him pep talk or anything. You know, I think when you're a backup player, you got to be ready to go in. That's why everybody's got to prepare well during the week and be focused on what they have to do to go in and be able to execute. And, you know, we'll try to get, you know, Mac doing the things that he can do well. And we got a lot of good players on offense, and try to feature what they can do to help them.
You mentioned the one goal line stand, but I was curious what else you saw out of your red zone defense. Tennessee gave you some help with some penalties, but what did you see out of your execution in the red zone?
Yeah, well, we gave them some help too. So we had a couple pass interferences on third down that, you know, probably wouldn't have been balls that they would have caught. So we gave them some help too. Obviously, the big penalty was the roughing the passer that kept a drive going, and we all went down and went up to 28. So, look, I didn't see it. I was watching the coverage and the routes and all that, so I can't comment on the call at all. There were a lot of penalties in the game. It's something that we've really been emphasizing with our players. But we didn't have a lot of undisciplined penalties in this game. We just got to do a better job of playing the ball so that we don't get pass interference penalties on third down. You know, they kill you.
Shane Lee has had two good games in a row. I was wondering if you could comment on his performances recently and just the linebackers as a whole being so young and how they've played as of recent.
So you say he did have two good games in a row? Good. Then that's your evaluation, so that's good. How do you know he had two good games in a row? Who said that? Who told you that?
All right, Shane. I don't think Nick Saban, like I said, has been up past this hour. This press conference happened at about midnight, 30 minutes after midnight on Sunday morning. He was in rare form here, wasn't he?
Yeah, he is not happy, man. And he hates those damn lights. I'm letting you know right now. Saban says, you flicker those lights one more time, I'm going to come up there in the box and whoop somebody's ass. He is not a fan of them. He wants all 12 o'clock games from here on out.
And let's flip it over to the other side, Shane. We don't have a ton of audio here from Pruitt, but I just kind of thought this was the key moment, obviously, of the game. Jerry Garantano, the fumble here. Jeremy Pruitt, he's pissed about it.
Well, it wasn't deflating. It pissed me off. I don't know about you, but it pissed me off, okay, because we just put a great drive together, okay, and really ran the ball at will down through there. You know, I would like to have seen us get the ball in there and see what we could have done. You know, there's lots of things that didn't go our way in the game. Some of it we controlled, some of it we didn't. So we'll watch the tape, we'll learn from it, and go from there.
All right, Shane, I can't tell who's madder, you or Dan Pruitt here. Shane, one final thing here on Pruitt I thought was hilarious. I don't know if you caught this, but going into the locker room for halftime, Coach Pruitt was asked about how his team was playing at halftime. asked about the second half. Did you see what he said?
Uh-uh.
He said, well, we'll have to see how the refs want to call this one.
Oh, my God. I mean, I'm done, Mike.
It's just so bad. Like, I don't think these refs rig the games. I certainly don't. But I think what we're seeing here week in, week out, a lot of poor officiating around the league. We're going to get to some more of it here at the South Carolina-Florida game. But what it does to me is it highlights the fact that they really need to hire some full-time qualified referees, kind of improve the product. And it's not for the sake of Tennessee. It's for all 14 teams. It's the product overall. They just need to kind of really work on that, I think.
That's what I hate, man. You watch one game, and it's like they're letting them play. And then you watch another game, and it's like every little mistake is just highlighted. And you don't like choppy games. I mean, this is contact sport, man. There's gonna be fouls. But if you slow the game down to looking at replays and things like that, I mean, it takes away from the game. So I was just not a fan of the whole officiating crew at all Saturday, man.
All right, Shane, let's kick it over to what I thought was the biggest shocker of Saturday in the SEC. 5-1 Missouri goes to 1-5 Vanderbilt, and the Commodores come away with a big win here, Shane, 21-14. And this was even stranger considering the fact Vanderbilt started some guy named Mo Hassan at quarterback. I honestly had no idea this guy was like even in the running to get snaps. If, you know, there was two injuries at quarterback for Vanderbilt, he comes out, you know, he wasn't gangbusters, but he did enough. He moved the ball. He was efficient. And man, Shane, this result was just shocking to me. Keyshawn Vaughn, he really took this game over. He got going. Missouri, you know, every time I looked down, Shane, it was 3rd and long. Missouri was 3 for 15 on 3rd downs, and it was because half the time it was 3rd and 8, 3rd and 10, 3rd and 11. I mean, it was just time and time and time again. And I got to ask you, Shane, everything was set up for Missouri this year. I know they had the sanctions and the postseason ban and all that. We still don't have a resolution on that. But how should Missouri fans be feeling given the fact that, you know, everything's building towards this season? It looked like Missouri was, yes, they had the huge hiccup against Wyoming, but, you know, I'm not saying we should get rid of this guy, but you just can't drop these games. These are embarrassing, and they've played 2 road games. They got embarrassed in both of them this year, Shane. So I don't know. What's your read on this? And I certainly don't think Barry Odom's a terrible coach, and games like this prove he's not a great coach. He's kind of still in the middle there, but I've just had a loss here for how Missouri loses a game like this.
Man, for starters, this was such an ugly game, you know, and it's easy to blame weather on some of these games, but not this one. It was just ugly, period. And Kelly couldn't get anything going. They couldn't get anything going with the running game. Even Vanderbilt, I mean, they won the thing, but it wasn't like there was stellar performance there, you know. Keyshawn Vaughn, he almost got 100 yards, but he did also carry it almost 30 times. So This was just one of those, I don't know, like Missouri was just not prepared, not fired up. You know, this one really caught me off guard. I thought the fact that Missouri was finally ranked, that they were getting a little bit of respect, that, you know, everybody was even talking about them being number one in the East. Mm-hmm. And you know, it just felt like the hype was picking up for Mizzou. And then to come out and just lay a dud like this, I mean, it felt like Wyoming all over again. So I don't know, man. I don't know where to go from here because Kelly can't do it all. But it really felt like he was the only offense Saturday.
Mm-hmm. And even he was forcing the ball. He threw a bad interception in the red zone. That was a killer for a team that didn't have much going. And there was a point where Mo Hassan, it was kind of a cheap shot, I thought, Shane. He was sliding and he got targeted, got hit in the head, got knocked out. They bring in Riley Neal first play. He throws an interception, almost picked 6. I was like, oh, okay, I guess that's going to wake up Missouri. But not even that won them the day. Riley Neal had to come in and finish the game for Mo Hassan. But, man, just an ugly performance. And Albert O got hurt in this game. If anyone saw it, it was one of the nastiest hits I saw. But thankfully, it looked he actually went back into the game, I believe, at one point. So he's not, you know, out for the year or anything, thank God. But it looked terrible. It looked like it scared him, and it just was kind of an epitome of the day where it just seemed like Vanderbilt wanted it more, and they were more aggressive, more physical, and it was just a shock to the system, everything that happened to Missouri.
For sure, man. I mean, these teams combined for a 6 for 27 on third down. I mean, it was such an ugly game. I couldn't watch it anymore, man.
Well, let's kick it.
I had money on it, too. And I'm like, damn, I got to watch this because I got some money on this game. And I was just like, Mizzou, do something, you know. But kudos to Vandy coming out ahead. I mean, that's a big-time win for Vanderbilt.
Let's kick it over to Barry Odom, Shane, on being out-coached, outplayed. And if he saw this one coming this week, he says he didn't.
You know, obviously disappointed with that performance. I feel like you look at four quarters of play, I think we got out-coached, and I think we got out-executed the entire four quarters. And we could not run the ball, which is frustrating to me that we couldn't. And we didn't convert near enough on our third downs to give ourselves a chance. And then defensively, you know, felt like we were close. We just couldn't get off the field. And, also you look at 120 yards of penalties. We won't beat anybody when we do that. So I'm going to take a hard, long look at that. And obviously I know there were a number of them that I recall off the top of my head that were in crucial moments. But also, we've got a decision to make on how we're going to respond, what we'll do. We've got to go on the road again next week to play a really good Kentucky team. So we'll find out about the toughness and the resolve on how we bounce back. But again, you know, credit to Derek. He had a really good game plan, and his kids played hard and executed.
Is this one of those games where you could maybe see coming during the week, just a flat performance at all?
I sure didn't. No, and that's maybe even more frustrating because I felt like we had great practices. I felt like we were ready to go. We pregame felt right. And we obviously didn't bring it for winning football in a lot of areas. We weren't close.
All right, Shay, so Barry Odom, you know, got no answers here. He admits they were out-coached, admits they were outplayed, said they had a solid week of practice leading up to it, did not see this result coming. But, man, I just do not know where Missouri goes from here. I know they still got the Georgia game and the Florida game, but I don't know. They've got some soul-searching to do here this week.
Oh, for sure. Now, is Mizzou – I can't remember. Is Mizzou 0-2 on – road games?
Yes, this is their only two, and they're winning at home. They're losing these embarrassing games on the road. This is actually their first SEC loss, so you know it doesn't eliminate them from anything. But once again, their margin for error in the division is gone. And I mean, all heading up into this game, Shane, we were just talking about, you know, is Derek Mason going to make it? Is he going to survive the season? And then here they beat the first place team.
That's SEC football, man. Just when you think you got it figured out, Mason comes away with a victory. You know, it's just South Carolina upsets Georgia. You just never know, man. It's any given Saturday.
Well, let's kick it over to Derek Mason here finally after the game. Man, this guy was fired up. He's been hearing about how terrible his team is for all damn season. He was really enjoying this one.
Coach, you've answered questions about your job security all week long, and this team comes out and upsets a ranked Missouri team. What are you feeling right now?
Well, first of all, you know, honor to God. You know, it's been a rough patch, man, but I told my team this, and I want everybody to understand this, okay? A lot of people want this job, so they think, but I'm the man that's built for this job. Every day, man, we grind. We grind. Don't question us. Don't question who we are, what we do, or how we play. Well, Vanderbilt men, Commodores, Akron, dad!
All right, Shane, Coach Mason, I couldn't even damn understand him there at the end. He was so fired up, but it's just great to see. And you root for guys like this because you know the deck is stacked against Vanderbilt. And man, getting a win at home against a ranked team, that's a hell of a win.
This game felt personal to him, man. You know, I mean, last few Saturdays, every time they talked to Mason, it was like, do you not even know what's going on with your team, with your locker room, you know? And it felt like he had all these boys fired up, and it was just showing the leader right there, man, just fired up on the sideline. That reporter was scared to death, man. It was awesome. So that's a good look, man. You love your coach showing that much emotion. We saw a lot of emotion from some of these coaches Saturday.
Well, I'll show you one we didn't see much emotion from, Shane. Let's jump on down to Fayetteville, where Auburn beat Arkansas 51-10. This was about
unacceptable.
This is about the only damn thing I had right all day, Shane. I said it'd be 52-10, so I was a point off there. But man, this thing opened with a Ben Hicks strip sack, and it was just one of those oh no moments. You knew yeah. It was downhill from there. Give credit to Arkansas a little bit. They got down to a 14-0 hole, actually 17-0 hole, and they held tight until the third quarter, and then Auburn just poured it on. You know, and I'm starting to see, Shane, a lot of empty seats, obviously, in the stadium. Even the damn front row, I was seeing empty seats for an SEC game against, you know, I know Auburn's not a big rival of Arkansas, but you still got to figure fans are going to go. Not that I say, you know, I don't blame them for not going to go watch this team, but the only bright side I could say for Arkansas, I thought Treylon Burks, Trey Knox, they continue to flash. Those are some legit players. CJ O'Grady, man, he's such a baller. I think you've said this before, but I think we're gonna look back and be like, my God, this guy was at Arkansas, and how often did they use him? You know, he's a hell of a player. But man, I don't know, ugly performance. Bo Nix, he kind of got going there on the deep balls. I think that was a big thing Auburn wanted to accomplish, and I thought their ground game looked pretty good considering Booby Whitlow was out. What are your thoughts on Auburn just going roughshod here on Arkansas?
Well, Arkansas, like you said, the box score is a little deceiving because, like you said, Arkansas kind of hung in there for a minute, and there was a moment I was like, man, we're not going to get this spread, you know? But when they did open up, man, they just showed you how electric this team can be. They've got some serious weapons. I don't know. I still don't know about this quarterback situation, man. It just felt like Hicks just never was in it all day long. And was Starkle out? I mean, was he just injured? I didn't hear that.
No, and that's one thing I was going to ask you, Shane. I mean, once this thing got out of hand, I mean, we're talking like a 30-40 point game in the fourth quarter. Why in the hell are you not putting KJ Jefferson out there? Because it seems like you know what you got in Starkle, you know what you got in Hicks, or Stephen John Jones. Put someone out there to give you a spark to something moving forward. I mean, that's what Tennessee did,
exactly.
And it gave them a spark. That's what Mississippi State's done. It's given them a spark. It just seems like Chad Morris is completely unwilling to mix it up.
Yeah, I mean, you've got four games. Has he even played any this year?
I don't believe if, Jefferson. Okay. I don't think so.
I mean, you've got four games. Bring him in. Let him play this one. You know, sit him for Alabama. Sit him for LSU. But let him get some experience. What do you have to lose right now? The fans want it. Shane wants it. You know, get him out there. Get him some playing time. This thing, especially when it got out of hand, they should have. I mean, he was taking snaps at the beginning of the game, like pregame, things like that. So there was hope that he'd come in, but I don't know. The only other one throwing the football was that damn punter, and we wished he didn't do that. You know,
I'm glad you said that, Shane, because I mean, this is the worst fake punt since damn Kirby's SEC championship call. And for anyone that missed it, Arkansas ran a fake punt. It was a damn pass. It was weird as hell. It was 4th and 11, and had they even converted this pass, it would have went for about -8 yards. So I have no idea what in the hell they were doing. They tried to throw it to a guy who was circled by three players, and it was a damn interception. It was Auburn's second interception of the season.
So bad. 2 years in a row, you sent me that one where against North Texas. Arkansas just owns bad special teams, you know?
Well, let's kick it over here to Gus Malzahn, Shane, before we get to sad Chad Morris here. Gus Malzahn asked about the performance of his running backs without Booby Whitlow in the lineup. And on Bo Nix, kind of getting it going, hitting some deep balls, and he had a really nice rebound performance coming off that terrible Florida game.
And moving forward, how do you feel about do you feel about your running backs now that you've got? I mean, obviously you just had a game, but you know, moving forward now in these next few weeks.
We played them all today, and that was by design. We were playing on Harold Joyner. I think you saw he's kind of got something to him too. You know, he can fall forward, and he's a big guy. So, you know, it's good to have depth at that position, and you know, we'll probably do something similar, you know, next week.
Yes, how big was that third quarter, especially from a passing standpoint, just to have some success and start to build on that?
Well, we hit the one to Seth. You know, we stacked it up to the boundary, and they put Sam Fox and rolled cover one, and Seth got loose. He made a really good adjustment to the ball, and Buckwell made a good throw. And then we had the reverse, I guess, after the pick, the sudden change, and then we came right back, and Schwartz, you know, got the nickel, and we threw a touchdown there, and that kind of opened the game up, and that point forward, you know, we felt like we had the momentum.
All right, Shane, so Gus Malzahn, I think this is exactly what they wanted to accomplish this week going into next week. Looking ahead to LSU, that's going to be a hell of a matchup here. But I think they got where they needed to go on offense, and we all know about Auburn's defense. Thoughts on what Malzahn had to say here?
Yeah, I think that's good. And you like it for guys like Cam, you know? I mean, it's not too often you see a senior get an opportunity to make big impact on the game, you know? Mm-hmm. So I was definitely rooting for Martin during this one, and he looked great, man. I mean, you got to take the big one out, but he still, you know, he still averaged pretty good the remaining carries that he did get. So that's what you got to have with Auburn, man. You've got to have that running game going, because if you don't, this offense does not work. We've seen it time and time again. So I hope Martin's the guy, you know, but I do hope that they do mix in some youth as well.
Mm-hmm. All right, Shane, let's flip it over to the other side. Chad Morris asked about the worst fake punt of the year on how long it's going to take to get this team competitive in matchups like this. And then last, Shane, I wanted to ask you about this. I'm not trying to, you know, I'm really not trying to pile on Coach Morris here, but you know, he was asked about improving the offense, and you know, just listen to how much he stutters through this. It almost seems, maybe I'm reading too much into this, Shane, but it just, his response and how he's just struggling to search for words here makes me think that he really doesn't have an answer to that question.
Chad, on the fake punt, I mean, what happened on that? What made you decide to run it there? And then obviously that wasn't the result you were looking for.
Yeah, not the result we were looking for. It was something that they had showed. And we've actually been working on that for a couple weeks. You know, I thought at the time that we needed something to maybe get us kickstarted. We just weren't moving. It wasn't moving the chains, and maybe needed something to give us a spark. I knew we were going to try to have to steal a possession somewhere. Luckily they missed a field goal, so that didn't hurt us at that point. But, we were looking for anything to try to get a spark going. Just an execute
between you guys and Auburn and just the time frame you feel like that you can get your team competitive in games like this.
Well, I think that you they're very talented. The thing that is probably is more impressive with them is the depth that they have, especially on the defensive side of the ball. They've got in, you know, great speed. I think their defensive front, as I've said all week long, is as good as I've been against. And then they're able to rotate in and keep guys fresh. So, you know, I just think that we got to keep developing our guys that we have. We got to continue to recruit. And we got to go back to work one day at a time.
Coach Morris, with five games left, what offensively can you do to get something going? It seems like you said earlier, your defense settled in today, mm-hmm. but you just couldn't get any points on the board. Would it be some out of the box offensive idea, or what can you do to get some points on the board?
Well, I think the one thing that we've got to do is you know, we got to execute, you know, we've got to be able to capitalize on the shots when we do take them, and really there's I mean, we've exhausted a lot. I mean, we're a lot of RPOs are happening right now, and we got to make sure that we're doing a good job of reading those RPOs right. And, you know, again, this is a good football team we went against this week as well, too. And we just got to go back to work. And, you know, I knew I didn't feel like we could get the ball run effectively, consistently inside. We were trying to get the ball out on the edge. That was the game plan coming in, and we knew their speed was good. But, you know, they were able to to stabilize some of the outside run game too for us. But again, we just got to go back to work and make some plays.
All right, Shane. So just when you think it can't really get much worse, I mean, this is where we're at with Razorback football, and it's terrible to see. But do you see what I'm kind of saying there? But specifically, now keep in mind, this is Chad Morris's offense. He's got both his quarterbacks in there. I know the offensive line is basically in shambles, but they've got some great running backs. They've got some promising receivers. They may have the best tight end in the league, and they just – I know Auburn's a good defense, but, I mean, how long is this damn going to take? And it just seems like Chad Morris has got no answers.
No, it felt like he was just trying not to say unacceptable. You know, maybe that was it. You ever do that? Like, there's a word you're not supposed to use, and you just keep thinking about it. Mm-hmm. So maybe that was because what I saw was unacceptable, man. I mean, this team had some fight in it, and it just feels like they find ways to lose. And when they do, I mean, they lose ugly. Arkansas doesn't lose pretty. They lose ugly. And, I'm trying not to bury them because I think Arkansas as a program is fantastic. I love the history. I love the tradition. The fan base is phenomenal. I mean, we've got a lot of Arkansas fans, and it's just like even though that they look god-awful, dude, they come out, man. They watch. They go to these games, and they just want to see the best out of their team, and it just feels like they're not getting their money's worth. And you know, sprinkle in somebody like KJ, even if he struggles, there may be a glimmer, there may be a play, something you see that really fires you up. We seen it with Tennessee. When we brought Brian in against Georgia, did we win the game? No, but there was moments in that game it gave you something to look forward to, like, damn, we're not going to suck forever. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And it just feels like Arkansas, or Morris especially, just doesn't want to give in to that.
Last thing on the Razorbacks, Shane, not trying to pile on, but I just thought this was worth noting here. The Razorbacks hosted a trio of recruits from Memphis, including one of their highest rated commits, a guy by the name of Martavius French, a linebacker. And this trio also went to Tennessee 2 weeks ago. Arkansas got these three on campus for the Auburn game, Shane. And then the moment he gets home, decommits from Arkansas, and all three of them are tweeting nothing but Tennessee stuff. So, my God, Shane, it's just when you think it can't get worse, it does for the Razorbacks, and you just wonder when this bleeding's going to stop.
I know, man. I feel bad because everybody's like, well, at least he can recruit, you know? And it's like, yeah, but recruits want to go somewhere that's got a future, you know? And it's hard to I'm not going to bury him anymore. I've done said enough bad things about him, you know? I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. They still got some winnable games on the schedule. But I do think that they need to do something fun, man. They got to make Arkansas a fun place. If you're going to lose, that's fine, but lose going down swinging. You know what I'm saying?
All right, Shane, let's jump to Athens, where Georgia beat Kentucky 21-0 in a damn monsoon. I mean, this reminded me, Shane, of like football in like 1910. when they invented the forward pass. I don't know if you know this, Shane, but when they first invented the forward pass in college football, if you threw an incompletion, it was a turnover on the spot. It's almost like Kentucky and Georgia thought those were the rules of college football today because neither one was really willing to throw the ball much. I give credit to Kentucky for at least they were willing to push the ball down the field. They just, they had a damn receiver throwing the ball. He can't really get it down the field accurately. Georgia completely unwilling to let Jake Fromm throw the ball in this one further than about 5 yards. I mean, Jake Fromm completed 9 of 12 passes for 35 yards. But if you miss this one, Shane, you didn't miss a whole hell of a lot. Basically, all that happened, Kentucky shanked a punt in the third quarter. The game turned on a shank putt. How often can you say that?
Yeah.
DeAndre Swift kind of went wild there in the second half. He finished with 179 and two touchdowns. He was the key to this game for Georgia. If DeAndre Swift is on Kentucky's team, I think it's safe to say Kentucky would have won this one 21-0. I mean, that was basically the X factor in this one. And the fans weren't happy, Shane. They were kind of pissed off with this performance here from the offense, yet again from Georgia. I mean, they're getting booed at home.
But how can you be happy, Mike? I mean, I know it's raining, but that's an advantage for offense. Your wide receivers know where they need to be. You know, it's a disadvantage for the defense. A lot of people talk about the rain and say, well, you know, they just got to throw out the playbook and just become a one-dimensional offense. That's not true. You know, you watch the pros, which a lot – Georgia has a lot of pro athletes on that team. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
They had opportunity to move this ball down the field. They didn't want to. Coach did not want to give Fromm that opportunity. And so how much better did Georgia get? There was times in this game Kentucky really had an opportunity to go up, man. You know, like you said, they could not afford to make any mistakes. Now, did they? Yes. The shank punt, the one pass that they did throw in the end zone hit the dude right in the hands. You know, you got to – you cannot make mistakes like that and beat Georgia, the 10th-ranked team in the nation. So Kentucky had opportunities, and I think – the fact that Shoup was able to get it that far and that close without a quarterback, man, is it just shows you how great a coach he is. But on the Georgia side, I can sense the frustration because we still don't have any weapons on that. We still have not discovered our playmakers on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not more confident in Fromm after this week than I was the week prior. You know, if Georgia's going to be a legitimate team out of the East, potentially beat an Alabama or an Auburn or an LSU, or I mean, they still got to beat Florida. You know, I don't know if they could do that right now because Fromm is not doing it. And you can't – again, you could blame the rain, you could blame the weather, whatever. You still got to take some shots. You still got to – you know, create some sort of chemistry with these wide receivers. You cannot be just one-dimensional because Swift can't win every game for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it was just a damn ugly game. But, you know, it kind of reminded me a little bit of last week Tennessee when they were playing Mississippi State and they just stuck to the run because I think they didn't have confidence in Mississippi State's offense to beat them. I think it was a similar situation here where Georgia really, you know, really keyed in on Lynn Bowden, really shut him down for the most part. I mean, he was 2 of 15 passing, Shane. I mean, my God. But they just, I don't think they had any concern that Kentucky was really going to put up any points on them. But, hell, Georgia wasn't doing much either until the third quarter. So it is, you know, that's.
Fromm had 35 yards passing. You know what I'm saying? Again, I know it's a downpour, but. We got to see it, man. Pickens is the only receiver that caught a ball, I think, you know. Maybe Robertson.
Robertson had 1 yard.
Oh, my God. You know what I'm saying? Is Pickens it? Is Pickens your only weapon? You have no tight ends now all of a sudden. You know what I'm saying? You've got to find these weapons because Georgia's schedule is not getting easier.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be some teams that they come up against, like Auburn, like Texas A&M, you know, like Florida, you know what I'm saying? Missouri. I mean, you cannot be one-dimensional. There's a chance you could lose 3 of these games.
Well, let's kick it over to Kirby Smart, Shane, talking about the conditions of the field and the field position being key to this one on not asking Jake Fromm to do much in this one. And finally, on the fans booing the offense.
Yeah, I think that's a wear and tear effect. It's not, you know, you're not just going to walk out there in those conditions and just walk down the field and score on people. It's just tough. It's tough on them, tough on us, tough to get traction. It's tough. And, you know, you get to watch games earlier in the day from our area and you try to figure things out. We went back and watched 2 or 3 games in the SEC last year on Wednesday, Thursday. That it really boils down to kicking game and who's able to flip a field. And, I mean, Jake Camardo did an incredible job of that today, and we impacted their punter a little bit. We rushed him and forced him to make some poor decisions and poor kicks, and that really was what flipped the field. And when you play in those kind of games, guys, you got to be extremely patient. Patient as a defensive coach, patient as a player, patient as an offensive coordinator. You have to be patient because you get frustrated very easily, and then you can magnify with mistakes. Our offense did a tremendous job tonight of protecting the ball. To play in those conditions and not put the ball on the ground or not lose a turnover was big for us. No, he never said that. No, Jake had 100% confidence that he could throw a ball. He wanted to. I mean, he wanted to. We were able to. Sometimes we were trying to make sure we did it when we had a fresh ball, make sure we did it when we had a fresh set of downs, make sure you take calculated opportunities to do that. It's just tough. I mean, at the end of the day, there's some tough things that have to happen to be able to throw the ball in those conditions. Number one, you got to protect. Number two, you got to be able to throw and catch it. And you got to be able to protect the ball once you get it. And we're handing it to a guy is a hell of a lot easier in those conditions. And like I said, it takes patience. So Jake was never really rattled or frustrated by anything. Jake's got a calm demeanor about him. At halftime, he was in a good place, and he kept leading our team and our offense.
Kirby, on the topic of patience, there were a significant number of people in the stands expressing impatience, especially at the end of the half. What's the effect of that?
No effect for me. I got headphones on. So, I mean, we're trying to make the best decision that gives us the best chance. I mean, you know, fans, that's what they pay their money for, to give their opinion, and they're entitled to that. I respect that. But at the end of the day, our job is to put our kids in the most successful situations and allow them to be successful. You know what I mean? I don't think you make decisions based on that, because if you do, you'll never look back. You got to make decisions based on patience, the weather, the field position, and all those decisions that were involved in that were calculated.
You know, one thing that I thought was particularly interesting from his comments here, Shane, and not to say that he's wrong, I think he is right, but it seems like he's a little bit making it an excuse where he's talking about the conditions and how difficult it was to generate much. We're going to hear from Mark Stoops in a minute, but Coach Stoops did not cite any of that, and he's got a damn receiver as a quarterback. So what are your thoughts on what Kirby had to say? And it just seemed like, doesn't seem like Georgia's got a lot of answers on offense here.
Hey, I don't know why, man, my blood pressure's always up, Mike. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And this Saturday, it was just, like you said, just when you thought you had something figured out, it comes out and you really don't. I mean, for him to say that it's hard to get offense going because of the weather, just and then you watched a game earlier against Florida and South Carolina with very similar situation with conditions, and they've got almost 700 yards of offense combined. Mm-hmm. You know, it's hard for me to say, you know what, Kirby's right. You know, no, he's not. I'm telling you, man, you can move the ball. You can move the ball through the air. In fact, you should have a slight advantage when you have conditions like this. And it felt to me like Kirby was afraid to give Fromm the chance to do that. He didn't want to lose this game on Fromm's arm. Now, I may be reading into that. He may have just said, you know what, we're good with running. But, I mean, what did you learn? How did you develop any of your young talent this week? It felt like a wasted scrimmage.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's kick it over to Mark Stoops, who talked about the fact that Sawyer Smith not given an opportunity in this game, still not ready to see the field apparently. And on his team, Shane, this is a team that could have given up a while ago, but Mark Stoops and his group, they still got their guys fighting, going up against a team that physically overmatched them. But I don't think you could tell for most of the game here.
Mark, your defense was so good that you got down though finally. Did you consider putting Sawyer in? Was he not available? What?
Well, it was tough. I mean, it's difficult for me to continue to answer questions on this with y'all. You know what I mean? I'm not trying to withhold information. You know me, I'm very upfront and try to be as honest as I can. He's close. It's tough on a cold, rainy, miserable night to put him in, and when he's just barely or getting close to being ready to play. And he would go. You saw him go in the South Carolina game. He would play if his arm was falling off. But I can't do that to him again. It was a tough night. We knew it was going to be a tough grind, and so we did what we did. We gave ourselves the best option we felt like we had at some point.
You're on your third option at quarterback. You're playing the top 10 team on the road, but yet you still had a chance to win. What does it say about your guys to be in there?
Well, I'm very proud of our players. And not because we we play hard and come close. You know that. You know our program's well beyond, just wanting to play somebody close. We play to win each and every week. But it's about their preparation, their attitude, and the things that we're doing. I've been pleased. It's been a tough season. But look around our league, and if you guys do, and you know a lot of people aren't tuned in to the other 13 teams in our league. But take a look around. Stuff's difficult. I'd like to have a camera in some of our head coaches' pregame talks there beforehand when we're talking to each other. We have a tendency to console each other for about a minute. And it's tough. It's a grind, but it is what it is. So I'm pleased with our team's mentality. I think we're getting better. As I mentioned, I think defensively we're growing. Offensively, we're down to some options, but the guys are playing hard. Their attitude's right. Coming in here, different beast. It's a tough group, and they are very, very talented. And you knew that you would have their full attention after last week. This team will be a top five team again by the end of the year.
All right, Shane. So Sawyer Smith, I guess, is just still not ready. They're not there to get back on the field. Obviously, Kentucky really needs him to be able to push that ball down the field. But I thought his comments here on the fact that his team continues to fight despite the odds against them, despite the fact they're down about, if you want to talk transfers, they're down about five quarterbacks this year. But there's no give up in this Wildcat team.
No, there really isn't. And, the box score, you see 21-0 and you think, Georgia had this one. But I'm telling you, there were moments in this game Kentucky had an opportunity, and they just had to play perfect ball. And you can't blame the players. I mean, every single time, especially Bowden, man. I mean, it felt like Bowden put this on his back, and he did everything he could to get the victory. But they didn't play flawless ball, man. It came down to a punt. It came down to a turnover, and it just dropped passes, and even though there wasn't that many, the ones that they did have, these guys had to be perfect, and they just weren't Saturday.
Mm-hmm. All right, Shane, let's jump on down to Starkville, where LSU went into town, took care of business. Shane, this was a very impressive performance by the Tigers. Win 36-13 on the road with the cowbells a-clanging. LSU got off to, I don't know if you want to call it a slow start, but their drives kept stalling. They jumped out to a 9-0 lead. I thought Mississippi State actually, this is probably the best game they played all season. And that's saying something, because I thought, I don't think LSU had a bad day. I know their coaches, their players kind of said that after the game. But I think it was more Mississippi State just giving them their all. And they really made LSU work for it. The dam really didn't break open for the Tigers till late in the second quarter and into the third quarter, and they really got the separation they needed. How about this one, Shane? Joe Burrow, it only took him 7 games. He scored more touchdowns than any LSU player in a single season has ever done. That's incredible. And I thought really the defining moment, I guess you want to call it, there was two in my mind. The Racy McMath touchdown, that really broke this game open. It was basically the first time Mississippi State had a bust, and Joe Burrow hit him for about a 50-yard touchdown. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's one bust, they identify it, and they score. I mean, that you cannot let up against LSU. And then I always hated this play on the old NCAA video game, Shane, where you're throwing it over the middle of the defense, and the damn linebacker just jumps 8 feet in the air, one hand grabs it. Well, I always say that's fucking unrealistic. Well, Jacoby Stevens did it in this one. I know he's not a linebacker, but that's exactly what it looked like.
The best
middle of the field. He just LeBroned it up there, didn't he?
The best catch of the day, man. It was just, and this was a tough football game too, man. Mississippi State was really in it there for the longest time, and similar to Kentucky, just had to play a flawless game, and when they made those mistakes, Schrader had 2 picks that just felt like he'll never again, 2 weeks in a row, not able to get going. And Schrader should not be leading this team in rushing. They need to be a balanced, especially against teams like LSU, where, man, they just pinned their ears back and they were all over him. So It was a heck of a game, and I think honestly, Coach would love to have this one back, do a few things different, because there were some momentum swings in this game, but once LSU got the upper hand, they never looked back.
Yeah, and Mississippi State also had 13 penalties, 109 yards on those penalties. You just can't do that against a team of this caliber and pull off the upset. Like you said, mm-hmm. they got to have a flawless game, and they were far from flawless, but the effort was there. Sometimes the execution just wasn't. Let's kick it over here, Shane, to Coach O, who was actually not very happy with his team's performance, and then the ass seen around the world here, Shane, Joe Burrow on his damn pants getting stripped off him here against Mississippi State.
I'll tell you, we're 7-0, and I think our team's a little upset about the way we played. I know our coaching staff is. I'm happy. I know I won't be as happy when I watch the film. There'll be some things to get done, but it's good for our football team to get us hungry for next week.
No comment.
Has that ever happened before?
I can honestly say that has never happened before in my life. I don't hope it doesn't happen again.
You were pulling it up like midway through as you were
on your way. Oh, yeah. I mean, I felt it coming out. I felt it. I heard there's supposed to be a full moon tonight here in Starkville, so I don't know. I guess we'll have to see. Yeah, my grandparents were here for that one. Awesome.
All right, Shane, I don't know about you, but I mean, I thought this was hilarious at the time, and then my damn Twitter was nothing but this dude's ass for about 2 hours. I was, unfortunately, you can't block images. You can only block words here, but at least Joe Burrow had a funny comment about it here.
Oh, yeah, man. Joe, I tell you, dude. I mean, he breaks the record, and they're only 7 games in, man. You know what I'm saying? Dude, he is on fire, and I bet Ohio State's kicking themselves for letting this one get away.
Yeah, because Joe's Ohio kid, you know what?
He's just, man, he's just cool as a cucumber back there. This is a, you know, I think, man, I hate to say it, but he's probably my favorite quarterback. Like, if I'm drafting, if I'm an NFL team, mm-hmm. give me Burrow right now.
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously doing it on the field. He seems like he's brought swagger and confidence to this entire team. And I think the way he's playing, I know there's other candidates around the nation, but I don't think there's any way he doesn't win the Heisman. I think it comes down to that Alabama game, obviously. But if they find a way, I mean, you might as well just give him the damn trophy after that one.
Yeah, for sure, man.
Well, let's kick it over here, Shane. Last thing on this game, because I thought, I just thought this was kind of eye-opening after the game. Joe Moorhead, this is just his opening presser. And for those that don't watch Joe Moorhead pressers, and there's probably a lot of you, this guy, basically what he usually does, he comes out and he reads a damn statement, and there's no energy, there's no passion. He's basically just telling you what happened. Then he's an insightful, thoughtful guy. He opens up once the questions come, but this was a complete opposite. None of that. He must have had notes he threw away in the damn trash. He came out here heated. He got really passionate in his opening, and I want to ask you about something on the back end here, Shane.
All right, the biggest thing with this football team that we stressed, all right, this week, last night at the hotel, and this morning, is that we were going to frigging fight. All right, that no matter what the circumstance was, all right, we were going to continue to punch and continue to scratch and continue to claw and get up off the mat, and no matter what the clock said and what the score said, we were going to keep plugging away and keep fighting, okay? And I thought our kids did that. That was a different football team than I saw on the field against Tennessee. And that was stress, that we were going to play with emotion, we were going to play with pride, and we were going to play in intelligence. The intelligence part maybe we didn't get. All right. What games come down to, all right, particularly when the margin of error is invisible, it's going to come down to turnover margin, which we lost. You can't turn the ball over 3 times against this team and expect to win. Explosive play margin. We created a good number on offense, probably gave up a few too many on defense. All right, then it's going to come to third down conversion percentage in red zone. All right, and certainly those 13 penalties, you know, some of the pre-snap things where they're making a move call and we're jumping there, that's stuff that's not maybe at the front end of it, but it's stuff that's going to not help and get you beat against a team like this, okay? I'm certainly not excited about the outcome. Okay, that's the number two team in the country. But when you look at it in spurts and see when we were playing well and we were executing and doing the things we needed to do, we stopped them, we moved the ball, and we were making plays. All right, when you're doing things you're not supposed to do, then we weren't making plays. All right, it's going to come down to how well we prepared during the week and our belief and commitment in our culture and doing the little things and building this program the way it needs to be built. I know people sometimes don't want to hear it, and they want the answer now. All right, Coach O's in 4 or 5 years. I promise you this, the things that we are building with this program, true freshman quarterback, all right, true freshman running back, Nathan Pickering, all right, Mo Smitherman out, two true freshman corners in the game. You look at all the youth that we have and the things that we're doing, and once again, not a moral victory at all. I get that part. But the process of what we're doing and where we're taking this team, all right, is going in the right damn direction. All right, and we played our asses off today, and we fought. Was it clean? Was it precise? Was it what needed to be against this team? Absolutely not. But I know this. When I'm in that locker room and I look at that team and I saw how we fought, we're going to build off of this. And we're going to take the good things, we're going to correct the bad things, and we're going to be a football team that continues to fight the rest of the year. All right, and we're going to get ready to roll tomorrow. We're going to make the corrections, and we're going to get rolling for Texas A&M.
All right, Shane, so this is kind of the passion we've been missing. I think we saw this last year in the Egg Bowl when Joe Moorhead kind of, you know, there was that brouhaha there with Ole Miss. But my thing, because obviously I thought he would really challenge his team. I thought they would come out and make a better game of this. They had the effort. Like I said, they didn't have the execution, too many mistakes to keep this a close game. But I think he's really fired up for the fact that his team did come out, showed up like they did, obviously not happy with the execution. But I also think there's some of this, Shane, where, you know, if anyone missed it, this guy was on Paul Feinbaum's show on Friday because the SEC Network was down there for this game, asked, you know, several times about this Rutgers job. He didn't really deny it. I don't think he really knows what to say because obviously some people there at Mississippi State not happy with him. He's from the Northeast, whatever. We've both on the record that if he goes to Rutgers, say that's a stupid decision if you want to rate the jobs. But I think his reaction here a little bit came from the fact that, you know, people are unhappy with him and the fact there's these damn rumors out here that he may be interested in Rutgers.
Yeah, I mean, Coach is an emotional dude, man. And like you said, usually usually we don't even play him because he whispers and we can't include it because the volume's different. But, man, Coach is fired up, man. There was a lot of heart, man. There was a lot of heart with Mississippi State. There was a lot of heart with a lot of the teams this week. Tennessee, Kentucky, Vanderbilt, you know, some of these guys, you know, when we went into this week, some really large spreads for these games. And it felt like unfortunately, other than Arkansas, that most of these teams really did, you know, make them ball games at some point. Even Arkansas, you know, got in there within two scores for a long time with Auburn. So it felt like there was a lot of fight Saturday with some of these less dominant teams in the SEC. And you hear coaches like this, you hear coaches like Mason yelling, that's what you want to hear, man. You know, I don't like, if you're going to lose, that's one thing. But if you're losing and your coach comes out talking like this, you know that he gave everything he had. You know these players did too. And they fell short to a superior team.
All right, Shane, let's jump on down to Columbia, South Carolina, where Florida really put this one away in the fourth quarter in particular. Beats the Gamecocks 38-27. This was a back and forth game, Shane. South Carolina actually had the lead going into the fourth quarter, and it took a late score just to make this look respectable. I mean, Florida just dominant in the fourth quarter. Got to give this team a lot of credit. Scored 21 points in the fourth quarter on the road. That's truly impressive. Helinski hit the deep ball on the you know, right out of the gate here, and then he damn didn't hit another one all day. They kept trying to dial him up. He couldn't hit him. I thought South Carolina's running game continues to impress. I mean, they kind of had their way with Florida. 217 yards, two touchdowns on the ground. That's pretty good considering what we know about Florida's defense. Kyle Trask came out looking real shaky, but then he came on late. And how about that 50-yard holding, Shane? This is the first time in my life I'd ever seen someone get held for 50 damn yards.
So I'm telling you, dude, South Carolina got screwed. And I know that pisses a lot of Florida people off. They're like, oh, my God, no, he didn't. But just reverse it for a second. Let's just say that was South Carolina running down, and you watched him all the way down the field hold his jersey. You know what I'm saying? Or you watched that offensive pass interference there at the end zone. I mean, the guy wasn't even, like, attempting to run around. He was just straight blocking. And, yeah, man, South Carolina got screwed there at the end, and Florida would be saying the same exact damn thing if it happened to them. This was another game where the officials made it about them and not the team.
Mm-hmm. And Will Muschamp also flagged for unsportsmanlike conduct. We'll get to that in a second, but that was classic, wasn't it?
Absolutely. You know, the biggest blow to this game, man, was Dowdle. Because I'm telling you, I love Feaster, don't get me wrong, but he is not the best running back on this team. And I think, honestly, if Dowdle was in there, I think this could have been even, I don't know, and nothing against Denson, but there were some plays, there were some opportunities. I felt like Feaster wasn't the right running back for the situation. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think they really need both of them to really maximize, you know, their running game. But let's give Feaster some credit. He had 175 and a touchdown. I mean, that's a hell of a game. But I see what you're saying. There's times when they needed the big, powerful back. They didn't have him. His status up in the air moving forward, that's unfortunate. He's been kind of banged up. And I'm starting to get concerned about Helinski. I still think he's got a hell of a future, but I just think he's banged up. I mean, his accuracy and precision just doesn't seem to be there week in and week out. We're going on a damn month of this now, so they really need to figure out what's wrong with him. I know they don't have a lot of options. You know, there's no one else really besides Joyner, who's half his damn time's at receiver, so they need Helinski in there. But let's flip it over to the Gators here, Shane. I mean, I know at times it's been unimpressive. Sometimes we're scratching our head wondering how in the hell they win in these games. But they're in a position now where I think they're probably the favorites in the East. They got a bye week coming up. Then they get Georgia in Jacksonville. They win that one. This is the team that's going to represent the SEC East in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, man. And I'm telling you, Trash didn't play a great game. I mean, you look at it, he got four touchdowns, yes, but he was not – he wasn't himself, and a lot of that probably had to do a little bit with the weather, but, you know, here we just talked about Fromm down there, 35 yards passing, and Trask up here, you know, I think he had 12 incompletions, that was it. You know, the guy was, I mean, he's playing some damn good football, and I think out of the quarterbacks in the East, something you've talked about and something I'm starting to agree with, I think he's the best quarterback in the East right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's kick it over to Dan Mullen, Shane, on his team having everything to play for entering November. This is this was the game plan going into the season, and it's come to fruition here for the Gators.
Feels great. Love it. You know, this is you drew it up and said, you know, this is you want to be in November. You know, we're going to head into November, right? I think next game's in November, if I looked at my calendar right. So you're heading into November in control of your own destiny and what's going to happen, and that's where we want to be. That's where we expect to be at Florida. So we got a bye week, chance to hopefully get some guys healthy. You know what I mean? I mean, it's great credit to the guys that have our team, the guys next guy up to get us in this position with all the injuries we've had to deal with this year. But hopefully we get healthy moving forward, and, you know, we got a big break and got a big three-game stretch after the bye to try to win the SEC East.
All right, Shane, so we're looking for a November to remember here in Gainesville. I mean, based on the way everything's going, wouldn't you favor the Gators to win the SEC East at this point?
I don't know, man. You can't count Georgia out. I know they looked bad last week, but that's a different type of ball game. Georgia's got plenty of talent, and, I mean, we are fortunate enough that that's going to be the next game both these teams have. So, but after that, man, you're right. It's smooth sailing after that.
Let's kick it over to Will Muschamp, Shane, on this damn gutless penalty, as he calls it, on putting his guys in a better position to be successful, and finally on the status of Ryan Helinski, who, you know, he claims he's good to go.
Do you know why you got the unsportsmanlike?
No, I don't. The guy ran 40 yards away and dropped a flag. I have no idea.
What is your...
I'd rather him drop it on my feet.
Did you say anything?
Yeah.
No, prior to the flag?
Yeah.
something that you think warranted an unsportsmanlike?
It's not my judge. Drop it on my feet next time.
So clearly you were unhappy about the totality
I'm not going to comment about anything else. Don't go 40 yards away and drop a flag. How about that? Goes.
You said you opened with you as coaches, you need to do a better job of putting your guys in position. How do you feel like you could have done that today?
Well, whether it's in the throwing game offensively, obviously, in some critical downs defensively when they were made some conversions. You know, the critical fourth down, we're in position. We got to coach the guy better. I don't know. We got to figure that out. But we're in position to make a play, and we don't make the play. They make the play. Those sort of situations.
Was Ryan healthy, did you feel like?
Yeah. And we would not have played him if he wasn't healthy and he hadn't been cleared by our medical staff.
He looked so sharp accuracy-wise the first couple of games, and that seems to have left him a little bit. Is that your read of the situation, and is there any explanation?
No, I think there's more than that. I don't think it's just on Ryan. It's not all his fault. We had drop balls today that we should have been caught. We had some breakdowns in protection that we've got to do a better job of protecting and keeping the quarterback upright. So, I don't think it's all on Ryan.
All right, Shane, Will Muschamp is just the gift that just keeps on giving for this podcast. But, this was the damn clip of the weekend, wasn't it?
Golly, is there just one reporter in there? Sound like Larry. Is that Larry King? Is he just asking all the questions? Boy, he was getting deep right there in Muschamp's lap. So, I'm with him, man. If you're going to do it to my face. Don't do it 40 yards down the field. So, man, Coach was fired up, and you saw how fired up he was. That was me after that Alabama game, man. I was breaking clipboards and running outside. I was upset myself. So, and he has right to be. There was a lot of bad plays, but there was a lot of opportunity in this game. South Carolina could have put this thing away. I am worried a little bit about Hulinski because he is not himself. And I'm not going to blame the weather. Because I haven't seen it since he got hurt. Mm-hmm. It just feels like he hasn't found his way back to the fold here.
Mm-hmm. All right, Shane, final game here. Texas A&M travels to Oxford, beats Ole Miss 24-17. This was a wacky game, Shane. This was like a damn drunk-ass Saturday night ball game. I don't know what in the hell happened here. At times,
it's cursed, Mike. It's a curse. That's my lock of the week. What do you think? There's going to be some bad balls bouncing here.
And that's exactly what it was. Because Ole Miss defense, they played well enough to get this W. Feel bad for that unit. They played their hearts out in this one. I give Texas A&M some credit, but Ole Miss time and time again failed to capitalize on this game. They really should have had this one. John Rhys Plumlee, he missed too many deep shots. He had that moment of hero ball, I like to call it. He tried to do too much, ended up in a scoop and score. That was the defining moment of the game, and hell, that was the margin of victory for Texas A&M. That was key. There was terrible kicking in this game. They both missed field goals they shouldn't have missed. Credit Kellen Mond. He put the team on his back. He didn't have his best day through two interceptions, but a lot of design runs. He was damn near the leader in rushing and passing here for the Aggies. So this was a weird one, but at the end of the day, you go on the road and get the win. If you're Texas A&M, you got nothing to apologize about. This is something that the Aggies continue to not really impress, but as long as they're beating these damn teams like Ole Miss, Arkansas, and all this, it's not a disaster. They need to get better because the schedule is going to get tougher here just as they move down the list, but... hell, a win's better than a loss here, I guess.
Oh, man, this one was just, like you said, just extremely frustrating, especially if you had money on it. You know what I'm saying? Because there was that brief moment. It felt like this was Ole Miss's game.
Right.
When they fumbled, they were about to score. I mean, it felt like they were about to score, at least put some points on the board, maybe go up 21-10. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, this thing is just flip back around and they're playing from behind. And then a couple of series later, I think he threw a pick and it just felt like, man, they just couldn't close out this game. They hung in there best they could, but you look at the end and you say, well, Texas A&M, they beat Ole Miss. That's what's supposed to happen. I'm telling you what, it felt to me like Ole Miss beat themselves.
Yeah, I think what we had here, Shane, a case of two young teams. One of them is kind of figuring out the ways to win these close games, and the other team is just not there yet. And you know, it's surprising that it's the team at home that can't do it, but it's the team coming in with a championship coach. I think that's the, that was the difference here, and that's something Jimbo Fisher hit on in his postgame presser, on the fact that the Aggies continue to win despite not having their best day, and on his young team not giving up when things get tough. They're starting to learn to win on the road, kind of like they did last year. So if I'm an Aggie fan, Shane, I'm not too fired up about this, but I see the progress in Jimbo Fisher's program.
And then go down. This game had a little bit of everything in it. I mean, both sides were back and forth. But, you know, you got to learn to win on your bad days. When you're not playing your best, you got to learn to find a way to come on top. And I give our kids credit for that, the perseverance to make the plays when they had to make them and do that. Because, I mean, it beats the alternative, I tell you that for sure.
Did it seem a little strange to you to go into the half with the lead after the way the first half had gone?
Nothing in football is strange to me anymore. A story you hear, is there anything that surprises you? Not and any more in football, it doesn't me either. And that's just the way games are, the inconsistencies that happen in the two. That's why I say playing well and scoring is two different things. You know what I mean? And that's what you got to keep. Remember, look at that scoreboard. Don't get frustrated. Play the next play. Play the situations. And we did that. And that's three straight weeks we scored in 2 minutes before the half. So those things are getting better, and that was a big job.
Talk about this three-game stretch a little bit. How important was this win? Oh, ability to just knocking out that.
Well, just your next goals of learning to go on the road and overcome. Not just bowl eligibility, you guys, that's your goals, your first goal winning season, goal bowl eligibility and all the things you have. But at the same time, learning to go on the road and persevere when it's not in your environment, it's not in, you know, everybody here is not yelling for you. It's easy to lay down like that. And our kids will not do that. They won't do that now. They're going to play, and we'll play hard. We don't always play well. But that's part of us too. I'm not saying them. We got to coach them. That's our responsibility to get them in that situation to do that. But it was big to go on the road, get that win. Now we got to go home. We got to play better and play against Mississippi State.
All right, Shane, so Jimbo knows at the end of the day, all that really matters, you win, you lose, they got this one. How are you feeling about this one if you're an Aggie fan?
I'm feeling good, man. You know, especially like Plumtree, you know. Bottling him up is not an easy feat. It's a feat that somebody, even Bama, couldn't do, and it was something you were able to do. Texas A&M had a bend but not break approach on defense. So I really feel good about my defense, you know, compared to that Auburn game. You know what I'm saying? It just felt like they're really after this team. There was a lot of pressure, a lot of tackles for loss in this game. So as far as the offense, our running back's coming around. You know, we're starting to slowly but surely not be so one-dimensional. It wasn't the greatest game, you know, but the fact Spiller was able to get 78 yards rushing, it felt like it wasn't all on Mon's shoulders. And that's what you got to have, man. Balanced team on offense. That's Jimbo, man. Balanced offense and aggressive defense. And Texas A&M can win a lot of ball games this year.
All right, Shane, that's all I got around the league. And this is a little bit of a long one, so instead of playing the guess the lines, I'm just going to tell you the damn lines. But right before we jump off here, these are the opening lines here on Sunday for Week 9, Mississippi State at Texas A&M. The Aggies favored by 9. Auburn at LSU. LSU favored by 12.5. That's pretty interesting. South Carolina at Tennessee. Gamecocks favored by 4.5. Arkansas at Alabama. Alabama favored by 35. And then last, Missouri at Kentucky. Missouri favored by 11. Any of those stun you or anything, Shane?
Yeah, I'm surprised they're even going to let South Carolina and Tennessee play this week. You know, that officiating crew is going to be, you know what I'm saying? What are they, over under 25 penalties? I don't know. I'm just rambling now. I'm upset, Mike. It's late. You're right. We need to go to bed. So, I appreciate everybody hanging out with us. We are going to get to the ratings reviews, I swear, at some point this week. I really do appreciate it. I'm noticing some koozie picks. That's awesome. If you got an iPhone, or if your buddy's got an iPhone, or if you can steal an iPhone but not really steal it and go to – we don't want anybody getting in trouble. But, you know, if you could get on there and give us a 5-star rating, that really does help us out.
All right, Shane. Thanks, as always, for joining me. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We'll catch you on the next one.
All right, see you guys. Go Balls. You got screwed, Mike. Give me your rock and I was ready to roll on to California with the guy named Joe, 'cause he made
rain from the sky. It's a thirst I just can't quench. It's an itch I just can't scratch. God forgive me for the life I've been living. I'm doing time in a five-star prison. Get my kicks, but it's taking its toll. The devil took my soul.
Martavius French, a linebacker, and this trio also went to Tennessee 2 weeks ago. There was a lot of buzz that, you know, they're all trending to the Volunteers. Fuck.
Morse is at your house.